Okay, hello. I am Representative Shelley Christensen, and welcome to the Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee. I'm sorry. In the Minnesota House of Representatives. Pursuant to Rule 10.01, I call this remote meeting of the House Higher Education Finance and Policy Committee to order. If the committee, LA, could please take the roll.
Chair Christensen.
Present.
Christensen, present. Chair Bernardi. Representative O'Neill.
O'Neill, present.
O'Neill, present. Representative Albright.
Present.
Albright, present. Representative Daniels.
Present.
Daniels, present. Representative Erickson.
Present.
Erickson, present. Representative Hansen.
Hansen, present.
Hansen, present. Representative Heintzman.
Present.
Heintzman, present. Representative Howard.
Present.
Howard, present. Representative Keeler.
Present.
Keeler, present. Representative Cleavorn.
Cleavorn, present.
Cleavorn, present. Representative Kosnick. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason. Representative Mecklen.
Mecklen, present.
Mecklen, present. Representative Knorr.
Present.
Knorr, present. Representative Sandell.
Present.
Sandell, present. Representative Sandsted.
Present.
Sandsted, present. Representative Thompson. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason. Representative Thompson, and a quorum is present, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Now, may I have a motion to approve the minutes from March 16th, 2021?
So moved.
Representative Albright, did I get that right? Moves approval of the minutes for March 16th. Is there any discussion? Hearing none, those in favor say aye.
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 Those opposed? The motion prevails and the minutes for March 16th, 2021 are approved. Members, we have three bills before us today. First, we'll take up House Files 1972 and 1517 from Representative Howard, followed by House File 81 from Representative Quam. We'll give each author a chance to introduce their bill, followed by additional testimony, and then finally, we will have time for member discussion and questions. First, we have House File 1972 from Representative Howard. Representative Howard, would you like to move your bill to get it to before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 1972.
Okay. Rep. Howard will move House File 72 to be laid over for possible inclusion. We have before us House File 1972. Representative Howard, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I hope you'll bear with me. I'm a little under the weather. It's Murphy's Law. I've got three bills up, like, right now, so that's what goes on deadline week, so bear with me. House File 1972 creates a competitive grant program through the Office of Higher Education for post-secondary institutions serving students with autism and learning differences. Young adults with learning disabilities and differences in autism have so much potential, and they deserve the opportunity to succeed and reach their full potential. Minnesota has been a leader in this front, in particular with the amazing work at Minnesota Independence Community College. In previous sessions, the legislature has provided a direct appropriation to MICC, but through consultation with MICC and the Office of Higher Education, this bill seeks to expand potential public resources to other institutions to provide an opportunity for more opportunities for students with learning differences. You know, there is an increasing demand for this group of young adults, and we want to make sure they have the financial aid available so that Minnesota families of all incomes can afford this kind of education. But specifically, I do want to talk about MICC, and we'll hear from testifiers because they are really a crown jewel, not just in our community where I represent in Richfield, but really our whole state and beyond. I am so proud to represent MICC, and we as a state should be so proud of MICC, and most importantly, their students. For those on this committee that have had a chance to meet some of the MICC students, it's impossible to do so without kind of welling up with pride, because you see in the faces of our students just how much it means to them to be part of a community and to see themselves, see a place for themselves in our world. And really, MICC offers something that no one else is offering here in this state, the kind of opportunity, the kind of track record of success, and it really merits our support. And so I could go on and on about it, but instead I'm going to turn it over to my testifiers.
Okay, thank you, Representative Howard. First up, we have Ben Lentz, the Director of Advancement for MICC. Please state your name and proceed. Mr. Lentz here. I think you're muted.
There we go.
Okay. Welcome. And please state your name and proceed.
For the record, my name is Ben Lentz, the Director of Advancement for Minnesota Independence College and Community. Chair Christensen and members of the committee, I would like to thank you for your time today as I speak in favor of HOTS File 1972. I would like to also sincerely thank you for your support of MICC. Your investment continues to have a truly incredible impact on the lives of our students, graduates, families, and citizens across Minnesota and the United States. We support House File 1972 because we support making additional funding available for educating students with learning differences and on the autism spectrum. Because as demand for this kind of education grows, we want to continue to make sure it is affordable for all families, regardless of income level, for these unique programs in our state. We definitely are an institution that would. MICC is unlike any other higher education institution. We are the only program of its kind in the country and are extremely proud to partner with you to make Minnesota a leader in providing higher education to all student populations, and not leaving behind those with learning differences and on the autism spectrum. The heart of our campus truly is our students and staff, and as much as I'd love to have a testifier or two with us today, they're on spring break. They've been working hard this school year, and while they're away, thankfully we have some great resources, and I'd like to play a video to introduce you a few of our students as well as some of our staff.
Since coming to MICC, my life has changed by me gaining independence and having a lot of friends.
High school was not that great because there was no like real programs for people with learning disabilities.
After graduating high school, I was shy, nervous, and had many really good skills.
Well, I was a little more shy about sharing that I had autism. And now I'm more comfortable about that fact.
I am not ashamed. I embrace my autism fully.
I have seen a lot of growth in students understanding that they do matter.
I think one of the biggest changes I've seen in myself is how much more outgoing, how much more I talk and stuff.
I talked a lot more than I used to, so I can see myself as a huge transformation.
Even though I finished the program, I feel like I'm still growing and learning new things.
I mean, we were a campus with one area, and now we are a true campus and community of over 100 in total with our graduates, and it's awesome.
This is a real milestone year for MICC as we celebrate our 25th year as an organization serving individuals and families affected by autism spectrum disorder and learning differences. And I really want to thank all of those who were able to participate with us last weekend when we celebrated that during our annual gala, a virtual gala this year, unfortunately. But we're proud of the outcomes, the accomplishments for our students and our graduates. But it is really critical to not just think about them, but to look at the statistics as a whole for young adults with autism and learning differences overall. I hope you guys are shocked to hear that a third of individuals with ASD have have not had any kind of post-secondary education. It's not a path that they've followed. Less than half have held any kind of paid employment within 4 years of graduating from high school. 87% live with their parents after high school, and many remain there for many years. And 24%, this one I find so staggering, but 24% are considered socially isolated, meaning that they have no other contact except for their family for over a year. And the reason I think that's so tragic is that's a pre-pandemic statistic. I can't imagine what that would be today based on the isolation that all of us have had. Now, these statistics are not a reflection of a lack of desire and or ability. What it really is a lack of options. So at MICC, we provide an opportunity for these young adults to completely transform the trajectory of their lives. We support wholeheartedly adding additional funds to serving this population of students because the demand is growing at a staggering level. Each year across the United States, it's projected that between 70 and 111,000 individuals on the autism spectrum will turn 18. This will add up to 700,000 to 1.1 million youth on the autism spectrum entering adulthood in the next decade. In Minnesota, we're seeing this as well. The number of students receiving with a diagnosis of autism spectrum disorder receiving special education services has grown by 138% since 2009. All people need an opportunity, the resources, a community to live a full and vibrant life. And our three-year program provides that curriculum of personal growth, advancement, and career certificates in the following areas of retail, culinary, hospitality, and health services. We're proud that they're all certified by Century College and endorsed by them, and that we see a strong majority of our students, even in this pandemic, were continuing to work because they are in essential worker positions. It's also important to note that in addition to the community benefit, MICC provides a strong financial return back to the state of Minnesota. Through some research with Wilder, we determined that for every dollar invested by the state of Minnesota, it's a $38 return to society. One of the things that we say at MICC all the time is that cliffs are inevitable for all of us. And this can be especially tough for those on the autism spectrum and with learning differences. To help with those cliffs, whether professional or personal, at MICC, we also provide a lifelong community program for our graduates to be a part of, to make sure that we're there to be with them before they go over that edge, before they hit that bad point. Now, you may see our students and graduates all over the metro. We have 50 local employment partners, such as Bachman's, Delta, Walgreens, Presbyterian Homes, Speedway, the Guthrie, the YMCA, and many, many more. You know, our students, they're not unlike each and every one of us. They want a quality of life that they earned, and they definitely want to give back. We know these challenges are all real, but at MICC, we are committed to continuing to working with young adults on the autism spectrum and with learning differences to go against the statistical likelihood of them living a quiet, lonely life. Now, I'll leave you with one last video before I pass this on to another testifier. And I'd like to introduce Carrie to you, one of our graduates, and also hearing from her manager at ARC. You know, thank you again so much for being in this partnership with us and specifically allowing Minnesota to be a leader in higher education for students with differing pathways to success.
This is my living room. These pictures in here are me and my sister.
My lord.
Growing up was very hard. I didn't have lots of friends, and I really didn't have, a lot of future goals.
In high school, Carrie was basically told that she doesn't have much of a future. And as it is, she's gainfully employed. She's got this support structure with friends.
I am a cashier at Arx Value Village in Richfield, and all the customers love me, of course. And I have gotten raises too throughout my 5.5 years there.
Because she has learned to be confident, because she's gotten some pride in what she's doing, she's a much happier person.
I wanted to stay in Minnesota because I love the area. The buses are easy. And we do another thing called Supper Club where people will come and help out cooking and just sit and round and play games and have fun. We're just one big happy family. You're not being alone, you're just independence is your living life.
Wow.
Changed. 8 years ago until now, I was like a baby. Carrie in 2021, more outgoing. I feel more stable. I love having a house. I have one roommate, and now I have purple hair too. Welcome to my house, my dining room. Our kitchen, these are the chore lists that give me daily reminders what to do. Some of the awards I won at Special Olympics. My class that I used to volunteer in made that for me. Sometimes we will have TV parties down here. And what can I get you? This neighborhood is really cool. I have a bunch of friends living on my street. You can just walk to go to Target or catch a bus. I love it. My best friend would have to be Christina Fraley. She literally lives right across the street. When I was off of work for 2.5 months, she would just check on me and see how I'm doing. And she would always like surprise me with little like gifts. When I was going through MICC, I had a lot of different classes and learning how to maintain friendships. 4 years ago, right when I got to work, I couldn't catch my breath. I was having a blood clot to my right lung. I was in and out of the hospital for 5 months. I had a lot of staff support from MICC. My stepmom and my dad was literally the rock for me. I just really thought my life was gonna turn upside down. But I'm a lot stronger than I thought I was. How I feel today from 4 years ago, 100 times better. I did 3 different sports for Special Olympics, bocce ball, bowling, and powerlifting. I was able to go to states and set a record in bench press. I've been working for ARC for 13 years. A couple of my managers gave me 13 balloons for my 13 years. Right over there.
I consider Carrie the heart of our store. She's one of our most experienced, most loved people here. Carrie's unique ability to remember every person she's ever met has been wonderful for just customer relations. If you go in that door and you talk to Carrie, she's gonna know who you are. She's gonna know what you like. We have a lot of regulars who know and love Carrie.
When COVID-19 first started, my work had to shut down for 2.5 months. I would say don't go into like your own little world. You need support around you.
During that time, Carrie wanted to make sure everyone on the team still felt like a team. She regularly called, set up Facebook groups, and I cannot thank her enough for that. MICC students built up their skills, their confidence, and we couldn't exist without people from MICC, I think.
We like to say no slumber parties in the sink with those dishes overnight, right?
Yeah, and it's been a little slumber party-ish. When everything was starting to go virtually, I was like very nervous that I wouldn't be able to cook without support help. But I'm getting more confidence in cooking on my own and eating a lot healthier. Basically, in another 8 years, I see myself probably still working at my job, still living in this house.
I
you, MICC. Thank you for helping me find my ground. I'm blessed. Okay.
So,
and I've beaten the odds.
Thank you. I'm assuming the video is complete now. And we will thank you, Vice Chair Christensen, for filling in to me while my bill was being heard. We are going to move on to Lisa Keitel, I believe. Is that who you would like to testify next to the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair.
Okay. Thank you. Welcome to the committee.
Yes.
Please state your name and begin your testimony.
Yes. For the record, my name is Lisa Keitel, and I'm a parent of a MICC graduate. My son's name is Andrew, and he has testified before this committee in previous years. He was able to make the committee members laugh twice, and he still wears that as a badge of honor. I want to thank you so much for hearing House File 1972 today, and I would like to express my support. Searching for post-secondary education for my son with significant learning differences was a very lonely and scary process. MICC shined like a light in an otherwise very dark situation. Once my husband and I found MICC, we were determined to do whatever we could to make sure Andrew could become a student. Like many other parents and students looking at colleges, for our family, trying to figure out a way to afford the education was a barrier for us. We did everything we possibly could to make it work, and our family made challenging financial sacrifices to get Andrew the education he needed from MICC. While Andrew was a student, the legislature passed financial support to MICC for the first time, and that financial support truly changed our lives. Andrew was able to access need-based financial aid, and that kind of aid is what makes it possible for families like ours to afford college for our kids with learning differences. I want to be clear, MICC was not an option, just an option. It was the only option for our son. It's difficult to convey the amazing transformation our son has made by attending MICC. Now, instead of figuring out where in our small St. Paul home Andrew could live, trying to continue his care, finding ways to provide for him financially, and worry of what would happen to him when someday my husband and I are gone, he now lives independently, has a job that gives him purpose. He worked with pride throughout the entire pandemic, and he invites us over to his place for dinner whenever his social schedule allows. His education at MICC transformed his life and therefore our lives. Thank you for making this transformation possible for my family and all other Minnesota families who are able to receive need-based financial aid because of your support. I hope you can support this bill today to make more resources available for families like ours. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Now, are there any other further testimony on House File 1972? Seeing none, we have three members with questions. And what we'll do today, I believe, I don't know if this was said earlier, but we'll have each member ask one question, and then if we have time for further testimony, we will go back through the list. So you will, Representative Keeler.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Thank you, presenters. Over the last year, I've learned a lot about MICC, and I think that it's a good reminder that when we talk about creating an equitable and inclusive Minnesota, it includes everybody. One thing I just want to ask about to highlight a little bit more is you talked about this is so much more than just a school, that there's this lifelong mentorship and support that happens. I like the slumber party without the dishes comment. I think all of us kind of have slumber party with dishes sometimes. But can you talk a little bit about what those services actually look like and what they're doing to help sustain your students?
Mr. Lentz?
Madam Chair, Representative Keeler, thank you for that question. Our community program really is a robust social engagement opportunity, but also support network. What we have currently is a house in Richfield that we use as our community center. There's advisors there who work with independent living skills, ongoing skills development for graduates who choose to be a part of the community program. They may check in with them weekly, monthly, every quarter, depending on their needs. And really it's to support them in their independent living. For us to remain person-centered, one of the key components is choosing the job you want to have, living where you want to live, and us being that partner in your independence, and really an interdependent experience that allows us to support those graduates, not just in the 3 years that they're a student, but hopefully until the end of their independent living and then on to the next phase of their life. And so we really are proud of how within the Richfield community, Bloomington, Edina area, where we exist, we have 80 graduates who continue to be a part of our community program that are benefiting greatly from that support network that exists. And when I talk about the return on investment that we've calculated with Wilder Foundation, really a lot of that comes not just from the three-year support, but the fact for 30 to 40 years beyond high school or beyond our college program, they have a support network in place that they can maintain that independence, employment, they're taxpayers, they're volunteers, they're truly a part of their community.
Thank you. Representative Albright, for your question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I want to tell you about a young man I met several years ago. His name is Michael. Michael was a high school student that was basically told he couldn't go to college, that his life would be spent living with his parents. And as he puts it, he watched his brothers have friends over, and he often wondered what it would be like to ever have someone invite him to do something. In high school, he never had a friend. But his mom refused to accept what she was told by others about her son, because she knew Michael's true potential. And as Michael described it, she Googled forever and finally found MICC, and she knew she had to get Michael there. Their family was living in Illinois at the time, but she knew if they wanted a future for their son, he would need to move to Minnesota. So now the rest of the story. Michael has worked for over 50 hours a week in a career he loves. But when Gray Wolf Lodge closed for COVID, within 2 weeks, he had gotten himself hired at Walgreens, all on his own, and all based upon the talent he possesses and the skills he now has because of being enrolled at MICC. As many of you members can recall, he has testified before this committee on multiple times. Members, he is a true inspiration to his peers. And I am proud to call him my friend. As you've heard from Representative Howard, we have a true gem here in Minnesota that draws in folks like Michael and their families from all over the nation. They stay here, they work here, and they become active and vital members in their communities. You know, we hear a lot of talk about the presence of special interest groups and the influence they have over what goes on around here. And Governor, I don't know what you must have been thinking or who you were consulting with when you were putting your budget together, but it most certainly wasn't with special interest groups like Michael, Andrew, and Carrie. It's troubling to me, members, that for the sake of some of those so-called special interest groups, we're thinking about leaving it up to a competitive bid process and quite possibly leaving some of these folks at the station, waiting for their chance to get on board the One Minnesota train. Candidly, the way this program has been treated is shameful. We all have our special interest groups, don't we, members? Well, this one is mine. And they will not be forgotten, nor will they be left waiting at the station for their opportunity to create their own best life. I urge you to join me and Representative Howard in strongly supporting House File 1972. Thank you, Madam Chair and members.
Representative Daniels is our last person for asking a question today. You may proceed. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I just have one question. I have a couple comments real quick. I've gone to a couple of the graduations. In fact, I was at Michael's graduation, and it was such a good experience. I think there were 17 graduates that year, and a lot of them were cracking jokes, and everybody had a good time and a good laugh. But the last graduation I went to was really good. The ceremony was great, the students were great, but afterwards, that's where I got my impact from. Afterwards, I had a gentleman at a rather fast pace coming from my right, and I was a little concerned what was gonna happen, but he came up to me and he said, I just have to thank you guys for the funding for MICC. I'm moving my son out of my basement today. He did the fist bump. And I knew at that point, that's a good program, right? And so anyway, I just have one quick question for Mr. Lentz. What funding do you have currently, and what funding could you use more funding to provide more services for more students? That's the only question I have for you.
Mr. Lentz.
Madam Chair, Representative Daniels, thank you for that question. We currently, in the last biennium, we're receiving direct appropriation of $1 million per year to help support need-based financial aid and tuition reduction. As you can imagine, a program like ours is very hands-on, and our expenses are not low. And that's because we need to have lower ratios of students or of teaching staff to students so that they can work directly with them. And we are operating in a wonderful environment where we partner with our Richfield friends, the apartment complex that we're in, a nearby church where we rent space. Really, the home that we own is our own property that's among that group. And it allows us to be able to grow. And that's what's happening now. We are experiencing, Representative Daniels, a significant increase in inquiries and applications to be a part of our next class. And the reason that we're so surprised and excited by that is we've been in a pandemic. So many people are looking at these tough decisions like this, and so many of our families that we're working with now, they've started to hear about us. They've started to know about us. And what they're hearing is there's resources to help make this an affordable option. There's resources to make sure that as a family in Minnesota, you can say yes to this next path for your son or daughter. And that's really opened up the floodgates because of the support from the state of Minnesota and the investment there. We've been able to turn around and go to our families who before might have never looked at us, never thought about MICC because of financial accessibility. And today we can say we have support for you. We have the opportunity. And so to answer your question, these additional resources would help us to continue to grow and serve more families, provide more opportunities. And as we do, more students coming on board, we will need more staff, talented staff like we have today, to be hired on to support the expansion and growth of our programming. So we're very excited by the possibility of both continuing to have the base funding, but also this opportunity to increase funding that we can use to support our growth and expansion and serve more Minnesotans with the autism spectrum and learning differences.
Madam Chair?
I see that Representative O'Neill has her hand up. We will, I think I'm hearing someone, but I don't know who it is. We're gonna have Representative O'Neill with a question. And then we'll wrap up with the closing remarks by Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just quickly to the author, how many other organizations that you know of would qualify for this competitive grant? since now it's not specific a direct appropriation to MICC, but it's competitive.
Mr. Lentz, if you could briefly share that with Representative Neal, that would be helpful.
Madam Chair, I think the author probably would have that information.
Okay, thank you. I will call on Representative Howard.
Madam Chair, Representative Neal, it's a good question. I'm not certain. I mean, we don't know of an institution who's doing anything remotely on the level that MICC is. Although in conversations with the agency and with some others, there are some programs that are serving students on the spectrum. And so really this is an attempt to kind of take some of that feedback. And I will say, I'm really grateful for having conversations with MICC when this notion of a competitive grant came on. Their reaction was, well, if we can find a way to help more students across the state, we're all in for that. But to answer your question, I'm not certain of the number and would still say that I don't think there's any institution providing the level of support and education that MICC is.
Okay, we will now move on to Representative Howard for your closing remarks.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thanks to the testifiers and to the strong support by members. I must admit, usually we have students that testify and they're the heaviest hitters you can come to talk about MICC. And so in the absence of students, you know, I wasn't exactly sure what to expect today, but I really appreciate the strong support. And what I would just leave you with is a little bit of something what Representative Keeler said, that equity is everyone. And this is our chance to put our money where our mouth is. And I do want to come back to that this bill is a competitive grant in the amount of $1.5 million. We do need to be providing, I really feel like when we came up with that number when we were expecting a deficit, that really should be a baseline for us, given that we provided $1 million to MICC last year. Happy to expand this to a competitive grant. But if we're truly going to support this program and support students across the state, this really is a modest investment in the scope of our state budget and one that makes a ton of sense on so many levels. And so thank you again, members, for your support. And I'll renew my motion to lay House File 1972 over for inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
Thank you very much for all your testimony today. We will now move on to Representative Howard's next bill, which is House File 1517. Would you like to move your bill to get it before the committee?
Yes, Madam Chair, I will move House File 1517 for possible inclusion in a future omnibus bill.
We now have before us House File 1517. Representative Howard, please tell us about your bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Hopefully I can get through without my voice going completely all the way out. House File 1517 is a bill that would increase resources and support to our students through the state grant program. Which of course, as you know, provides need-based financial aid to lower income and middle income Minnesotans to help them afford college. And, you know, this week we heard in committee from students about just how challenging it is to afford college. And this bill would expand resources so that more students are able to receive the state grant and receive a larger state grant. Just in the way of background, a few important facts to consider about the state grant program and why it is so vital to helping Minnesotans afford a higher education. The state grant program served 77,000 students last year. 43% of all students received a state grant, and 64% of all state grant funding supports students at public institutions. And 68% of state grant recipients come from families with under $50,000 a year in income. And this one is a very important to me, an important statistic given the mission of our work this session. This is a significant tool to address equity when it comes to access to higher education, because 56% of Minnesota students of color receive a state grant. So what this bill does is it increases the amount student grants would receive by reducing the expected student share in the state grant formula, which is currently set at 50%. This would move that percentage to 47%. And what that change would do would help about, according to the fiscal note, between 4,000 and 5,000 students new students be able to access the state grant. It would also provide an increase in the state grant to on an average of $200 to $300. The increased grants for the lowest income full-time students would increase by $500 to $770. And this, the cost of doing this is significant. It's $43 million. But I just want to remind the committee of what those resources would pay for and why it's so vital that we invest in our state grant program. Research shows, decades of research have demonstrated that need-based grants like the Minnesota State Grant Program make a huge difference. They positively impact our college enrollment, retention, and completion. They decrease borrowing and excessive student work, and it encourages students to stay in Minnesota to attend college. So these improvements will make a tremendous difference for our struggling students. In the midst of the pandemic, we need to have our students back, and I believe that that's what this bill does. So with that, Madam Chair, I'll turn it over to our testifiers.
Thank you. We have four testifiers today, and they will have up to 2 minutes to testify before the committee today before we move on to our member questions. First of all is Sophie Newcomb. Welcome to the committee. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the House. My name is Sophie Newcomb, and I'm grateful to have this opportunity to testify with you all today. I will be graduating in May from Concordia College in Moorhead, receiving a degree in communication studies with a minor in psychology and an English writing certificate. There were a handful of factors that influenced my decision to attend Concordia. First, as much as my parents would have liked, neither of them were able to contribute financially to my collegiate career. Additionally, after completing my undergraduate degree, I had the intention of continuing my education. As a result of this, I knew I would have more than 4 years of school to take into consideration, which made the financial commitment of college incredibly daunting. Ultimately, attending Concordia would not have been financially feasible or a considerable option if I had not been a recipient of the Minnesota State Grant. I might have pursued some type of degree without this grant. However, I would not have gone to an institution I loved and most certainly would not have had as generous an amount of opportunities as I did at Concordia. In addition to receiving the Minnesota State Grant as financial support, I've consistently held 3 on-campus jobs to support myself through college. I've served in a variety of leadership positions, and this school year I've had the opportunity to serve as Concordia's student body president. The experience and knowledge I've gained from this position will be carried throughout my professional career and beyond. In addition to leadership building opportunities, I established genuine relationships with faculty, staff, and professors, and I wouldn't trade these connections for the world. The amount of support and guidance I received during my time at Concordia is unmatched, and I cannot imagine a college experience without it. The support I received and opportunities I had at Concordia encouraged me to pursue a career in advocacy. In the fall, I will be attending law school, taking the first crucial steps to become a practicing attorney. Without your investment in and support of the Minnesota State Grant Program, I'm confident I would not be going to law school. And I'm even more confident I would not have even considered a career in law and advocacy, with the only barrier being financial concern. Each of your commitments to continually invest in the Minnesota State Grant have direct correlation to students having the option and ability to pursue higher education, take advantage of endless opportunities, and achieve their life ambitions. I genuinely thank you for supporting the state grant program. Because of the financial support this grant offers, I was able to succeed in ways I had never considered possible. I urge each and every one of you to make the commitment to increase funding in order to allow more students to receive the same opportunities I was fortunate enough to have. I look forward to hearing of your official commitments to increase funding, and thank you again for your investment and support.
Thank you. Now we have Desiree Rhodes. Please state your name and begin your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair and representatives, for taking time out of your day to listen to my testimony. My name is Desiree Rhodes, and I am a non-traditional student who is set to graduate with my honors AA from Central Lakes College in May this year. I will be transferring to Bemidji State University in the fall to pursue a BS in psychology with a minor in sociology. My ultimate goal is to become an instructor at the higher education level. I currently serve as the president of the newly formed Arts Club at CLC and the co-publicist of the State Senate. I'm also the treasurer of the Humanities Common Ground a club that is devoted in bringing awareness to societal issues that create division by having tough, open, and sometimes triggering conversations in order to find our common ground as human beings. I am currently employed at CLC as a tutor through the work study program and as a student open education resource specialist. I am very passionate about making sure that college is accessible to those who choose that path. I sit before you now as a single mother of three, with three wonderful children who grew tired of working a mind-numbing job to provide for her children. My youngest child entered school and I made the fateful decision to leave my job of 12 years and focus on going back to school to achieve my own dreams. I sought out a support network within the walls of CLC, and I found out that because I am a first generation college student, I qualify for the TRIO program. My advisor, Brianna, has been the greatest tool in my box. One of the most important things she has done for me is to walk me through the process of understanding financial aid and applying for it. As a single mother, I am lucky enough to qualify for programs like the state grant. Going to school full-time and trying to work full-time while raising children is nearly impossible. And having access to grants like this has let me focus more on school by allowing me to reduce the number of work hours I need to work, all without sacrificing a ton of time with my family. With the largest American generation set to finish graduating in 9 short years, we are beginning to see shortfalls occur in trades like electricians, plumbers, and even teachers. The job loss caused by the pandemic has provided a perfect catalyst for many people to take the opportunity to make a career change. An increase in the state grant would not only help younger people with their college costs, but also older people like myself to feel more at ease with this life-changing decision to attend school by alleviating some of the financial burden that coincides with a decision of this nature. It is my hope, Madam Chair, that you will consider this proposed increase of the state grant as an investment in our society and our future economic stability and understand its importance. Thank you.
Thank you. And then now we have with us Reggie Ajin Boateng. Hopefully I got that right. Please state your name for the record and begin your testimony. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair and members, thank you for the opportunity to testify. My name is Reggie Ajin Boateng, and I'm a senior at Augsburg University, majoring in sociology. I was born in Minneapolis, but I was brought up in Ghana by my parents. I moved to Edina, Minnesota 7 years ago with my mother and sister. I attended Valley View Middle School and Edina High School. University for me was not something I excitedly spoke about in my home. It was always on my mind, but I just did not know where to go with it. Although my sister and I were born in the States and with my mom living in Minneapolis in the past, we felt like outsiders. I felt like an outsider. We lived in Edina, and my mom was basically a single mother since my father was not here to support us. And so she had to do the best that she could in order to provide for us, and she did that. I originally wanted to attend St. Olaf College, but I ended up getting waitlisted and did not know where I would end up. So I applied to Augsburg University, and I got in with a lot of scholarships and state grants. These grants opened doors of opportunity for me, because my family and I cannot afford to attend university. And so being able to qualify and receive these grants gave us hope. Looking at my Augsburg career, it is safe to say that I've definitely found more about myself here due to the people that I've built relationships with and just taking the time to do the things that I love, which include playing soccer, basketball, table tennis, being a photographer, and serving my community. I'm able to be my true self here at Augsburg. I have not necessarily had to code switch, and that is a great feeling. Being your natural self and not having to put on a mask to try to fit in and please people is one of the best feelings. My network has grown over time being at Augsburg. Sophomore year, I was invited to a meeting that was for a scholarship opportunity, the Cerise Walburn Scholarship. The Cerise Walburn Foundation is designed to provide African-American men with networking and job opportunities post-graduation. The foundation also provides mentorship for everyone within the cohort. I applied, got the position, and I became a Cerise Walburn Scholar. The doors that have opened for me now would not have happened if I did not try. The Siri C. Walburn Foundation not only provided me with networking opportunities, but it helped me navigate my path in life. I did not really have any male role models growing up, but seeing people who look like you being successful and being the best that they can be was something special that I will always be grateful for. Through Siri C. Walburn, I was able to take on leadership roles that have shaped me to becoming a better man and a better leader. Being at Osric for the last 4 years has taught me a lot of things. If you want something, you have to work hard in order to achieve it, no matter the circumstances. Another thing that I've learned is that it is important to put yourself out in the world and try to be the best that you can be, because the way to improve yourself is to challenge yourself. We as individuals must be uncomfortable with the things that we face in our lifetime in order to grow. I would not be in the position that I am in today without the Minnesota State Grant Program, and I cannot be more grateful for that. I plan to utilize my education and use my skills and abilities to obtain a position in the fields of public relations, human resources, a sales representative, or a management consultant post-graduation. The Minnesota State Grant Program provides students opportunities to live their dream of attending university without worrying about their future. I would like to thank you for supporting the state grant program, and I hope you continue to increase funding for future Minnesota students. Thank you for your investment in the program.
Representative Bernardi, you're on mute.
There we go. Thank you. We have with us now Paul Prebino, and if you could please state your name for the record and proceed with your testimony. Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. I'm Paul Prebino, the president of Augsburg University, and it's often the case, I should just step back and let the student voices really make the case for the state grant program, because they do a wonderful job for that. I also want to thank Representative Howard for bringing the bill with a file forward, a proud Augsburg grad, and we're proud of him for his public service. Maybe I can just draw some threads together from a president's perspective. I'm finishing my 15th year as Augsburg's president, and I have seen now 15 years of the impact of this state grant program on hundreds and thousands of students across our state. And it really is a gift to our state that we have this robust state grant program. I want to lift up two important issues, I think, that are important for us to remember about this. And first is, of course, the one that we often talk about. This is about access. And certainly one form of that access is what we've seen here from Sophie and Desiree and Reggie. They were able to choose where to go to school, to the institutions that best met their needs. The kinds of places, whether they were a private institution, a community college, a public university, and that choice is so important for students because they thrive in settings that are really the right for them in terms of scale, small classes, opportunities to develop relationships for life. But certainly the other theme around access is the one that has already been lifted up so carefully here, and that is this commitment to equity. These grants go to those students who have the greatest need. These grants make it possible for them to go to college. These grants take away the need to borrow as many funds as they want. And when you take these grants and put them alongside of all of the philanthropic support that our institutions also generate to be able to provide financial aid, like the Siri C. Walburn Scholarship Fund that Reggie mentioned, we make it possible for students from a variety of backgrounds, all kinds of backgrounds, to be able to go to college and to receive a college degree. Maybe just a couple of data points from Augsburg's experience. Our student body over the past 3 years has become a majority of BIPOC students. Our last three entering classes were 65% students of color. And that is a powerful nod to the ways that the state's demographics are really shifting. And we know that those are the future leaders of our state. We also are the case that 49% of our students, our undergraduate students at Augsburg, receive a state grant. And about 48.5% of our students come from families whose average annual income is less than $50,000. So you start to see exactly how the impact of this as an equity commitment that this legislature and the governor make and our state makes to these important students who will be our future leaders. But perhaps the piece that we don't always remember, and that is about outcomes. And you've heard from all three of these students their aspirations. The grant helps them to stay in college or in university, but it also helps them to graduate. And when they graduate, they stay in Minnesota at a high, very high rate, and they become the economic engines in businesses and corporations, in nonprofits, in public service. And we know that the long-term impact of the investment that we make in the state grant program for any individual student, we have evidence actually that in our research that the economic impact on for Minnesota's economy over their lifetime is $1 million. Think about that. Your investment in these students as they stay in Minnesota and give back is $1 million. So for all of those reasons, I stand here in support of House File 1517 and are so grateful for the ways that you have made this a priority over the years, and hope that, and certainly count on the fact that you will continue to do so. So thank you very much.
Thank you. And I talked with Representative O'Neill before the committee today, and we were going to start with her question after the testifiers today, and then we will on deck will be Representative Erickson. Representative O'Neill.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Howard, if I could have you look at the fiscal note, and I wish we were in person, it'd be easier, but if you do you have the fiscal note in front of you, Representative Howard? It's on page 5. Awesome. Okay. So I just wanted to just get on the record a few things that hadn't already been said that are really important for our fiscal committee to actually consider, especially as we're only going to be laying this over and not voting. So if you look at the top of page 5 of the fiscal note, it talks about FY 2022, so the first year of the fiscal that we're talking about. Representative Howard did talk about how many additional students would be helped, which is 5,239, so that's a lot of new students. But it is only $243 on average more for the entire year. So that's not a lot of extra money, just so we know what it is, because it's a very high cost to the taxpayer and to the budget here at the state, but it only nets out an average of $243 per student. And I want to also point out also in the base appropriation, so what are we starting from? So it's $207 million is the base appropriation. So in the state grant program for 1 year, the base is $207 million. The cost of this additional amount, changing it from 50% to 47%, would then be $224 million. That's just in the first year. So we're adding another $17 million to net out an average of $243 per student per year for that 1 year. In the next year, of 2023, if you look at the base appropriation, it's the same, $207 million. And the average does go up a little to $301 for the entire year. We are serving more students, but not nearly as many as the first. It's only 3,900. But the cost goes from $207 million to $233 million. And then it just continues on in the tails. So I just want to be really clear how much this, you know, how expensive this actually is, that we already have $207 million that we put into the state grant program. And the net on the other side of it is between 243 average to 301 average per year. And I'm just wondering if Representative Howard, if you have any other thoughts about that. I was trying to put it out there, Representative Howard, and not make you go through those numbers, but if you have a reaction to that and if you think this is a good expenditure for.
Representative Howard.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, Representative O'Neill, for going through it. I appreciate that. You know, it is, as I said in my opening comments, the $46 million over the biennium. It's significant. I will say that it is, from my perspective, a really wise long-term investment. You know, Minnesota's strength, really, our competitive advantage as a country or as a state in our nation really is our world-class workforce. And that's a big part of our world-class education. And if you'd ask me what our sort of gap is when it comes to our world-class education, it's our gaps in equity. And so when we look at making investments, the state grant program to me is one important tool that follows the student and will make a big difference in terms of equity. And so especially given our improved budget situation, I do think this is a wise investment.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just really quickly, you know, I don't know if the characterization of making a big change, it's $243 for the entire year
I mean, that's not a lot. I wish it was a bigger bang for the buck, but that's the reality of what you're getting. So we're putting in a whole lot of money. More people are getting help, but the average is only $243. So a lot of people will be getting less than $243 for the year. Just, you know, just so we know what we're doing here. Thank you, Madam Chair.
And we have Representative Erickson is, we have one more question, and it's Representative Erickson.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. My concern is that the governor has proposed a 6.2% increase in the state grant program, I believe. And with what is in the Howard bill, that's going to be a real loss for our students, as I can see it. So I don't know what we're planning to put in the omnibus bill that you're preparing, Madam Chair, but the governor's recommendation is going to really hurt our students. And then if we add this 50 to 47% in the student share, we're going to be in the negative, I think. So just some thoughts. Thank you.
Seeing no further discussion, I will turn it over to Representative Howard for his closing remarks.
Thank you, Chair Bernardi. And before I do that, I wanted to ask Reggie a quick question. Do they still have a ping pong table up on the eighth floor of Ernest Hall at Augsburg? That's where I'm
okay. This is definitely in the a common thread that you have here. If you could answer that question, that would be great. Mr. Ajin Boateng, I hope I got it right.
You didn't, it's okay.
No.
But I believe so. I'm not sure, because I'm a senior and I lived there freshman year and there was a table my freshman year, but I'm not too sure.
Okay.
Well, thanks for testifying.
Representative Howard.
Okay. Yep. I'm a proud Auggie and just glad to see Augsburg here in the higher ed committee today. So I will just close briefly. Representative Erickson teed up my closing well, in that really, when we talk about the state grant program, the most important factor is our values and how our budget and how we communicate our values through our budget. And that's the same for our state institutions and for the state grant program. And the balance of this committee's work, I think, just underscores the huge importance and need to make big investments in higher education. And so I just think this committee has done such good work, and I look forward to the discussion in the rest of this session about how we invest in our students. And I think we do that by investing in our state grant program and investing in our institutions, and really taking a holistic approach where we make higher education a priority. And that's what I think this bill does and this committee is doing and will do this session. Thank you, Madam Chair. And with that, I will renew my motion to lay this bill over for possible inclusion in an omnibus bill.
Okay. Thank you, Representative Howard, and to all the testifiers today. We now will move on to Representative Huang's bill, and I will move House File 81 to refer to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Representative Huang has an author's amendment labeled A21-0103. I will move the author's amendment to put the bill in the form the author wants. Does everyone have the amendment? Representative Kwam, please tell us about what your amendment does.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And this would focus it more in the Board of Pharmacy for coordinating this effort and activity. And we have had discussions with the U of M Board of Pharmacy and people active in pharmacogenomics to do this improvement. It also would shift it, the funding, out of this committee and into the Chair Liebling's health policy and finance committee. That you would still be involved, but would not be the home, I should say, of this task force activity.
Okay, I'm looking to see if we have any
Representative Erickson, I'm guessing that your hand is up from last time, but I just want to be certain.
Oh, I'm sorry, I'll lower it.
Okay, no problem at all. Okay, so now that you've done that, there is no discussion, I hear, that all those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye.
Those opposed? Aye. The motion prevails and the author's amendment is adopted. We have before us House File 81. And Representative Quam, I just want to verify with our staff here, Mr. Hopkins, that what's before us for our committee is specifically lines 116 and 117 and 2.17. If Mr. Hopkins could verify the language that would be our committee under our purview of our committee.
Madam Chair and members, so as amended by the DE, there's very little higher education subject matter in this right now. The University of Minnesota is only mentioned at lines 1.16 to 1.17, 2.7, 3.10. So those are the only instances in the bill as amended where any higher education institution is even mentioned in the bill.
Right, and could you just give an overview that it's up for the task force, and then the last one, could you just verify it?
Sorry, Madam Chair, could you repeat that question?
Oh, right, I just wanna let members know that it's regarding the makeup of the board for the first two that you mentioned, and then the last one, could you just mention what that is about?
Okay, at 3.1, Madam Chair members, at 3.10 to 3.12, the Board of Pharmacy is permitted to enter into a contract with the University of Minnesota for conducting research and surveys or providing administrative assistance to the task force. And the other two instances are just relates to membership of the task force, people from the University of Minnesota being members of the task force.
Okay, Thank you. And we have Representative Quam. I believe you have some testifiers who can testify to these provisions for the Higher Education Committee. Was that what you'd like to move to now?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Yes, they have been working on grant programs and a multi-faceted, people from the U of M, Mayo, pharmacists and others have been working for years on related grants and activities, and they could clarify any questions. I'm not sure what the chair would prefer for, a general background or how specifically confined to just a small portion.
Representative Quam, what we can do, we have a little time permitting. We could have them address what's before the committee, and if they would like to, in a couple minutes or so, add some other comments, that would be fine.
Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be best if. Thank you, Madam Chair. It might be mm-hmm. best if Dr. Pamela Jacobson gave a bit of a background and some of the details.
Okay. We will begin with Dr. Pamela Jacobson. Welcome to the committee, and please state your name for the record.
Yeah. Good afternoon, Madam Chair and distinguished committee members. My name is Pam Jacobson, and I'm a professor at the University of Minnesota in the College of Pharmacy. I am leading with three other faculty members a university grand challenge project that is looking at how pharmacogenomics could be used for more effective use in Minnesota. It was selected out of over 100 faculty ideas as a healthcare innovation that has the potential to improve human health in the state and beyond. I am a pharmacist by training, and in the first years of my career, I implemented the clinical pharmacy services for the bone marrow transplant unit at the University of Michigan. Through that work, I learned firsthand the tragedy of drug cancer failure and the despair of life-taking toxicity. Now at the University of Minnesota, I have since devoted my career to improving the safety and efficacy of medications. And for the last 15 years, I have studied pharmacogenomics as a tool to improve medication use. Pharmacogenomics is a form of precision medicine. It is the science of using DNA makeup of cells to predict how effective or toxic a medication will be, thereby providing each patient with individualized therapy and or dosing. In the last 20 years, much has been learned about the relationship between medication and genes. The FDA has issued a long list of drug gene pairs that affect medications that are used every day. The science is now sufficiently mature for implementation into routine care. We already follow a precision medicine approach in cancer care, where we do genetic testing of the cancer cells themselves. Cancer medications are then tailored to match a specific DNA mutation in a patient's tumor. It has become the standard of care and is working. Our cancer patients' treatments are better and they live longer and healthier lives. With pharmacogenomics, we can look at patients' inherited genetics, which can then guide decisions about medications they use. Pharmacogenomics is important for patient safety. Every one of us has taken a medication, and 4 out of 5 of us has an inherited genetic variant that could affect how safe or a medication could be. Clopidogrel, also known as Plavix, is used to prevent heart attacks and strokes. But between 40 and 50% of Pacific Islanders and East Asians have a genetic variation that makes Plavix less effective. Last month, the manufacturers of Plavix were ordered to pay the state of Hawaii more than $834 million for failing to properly warn the consumers in the state, of which a significant portion of them have that ancestry, about the health risks of Plavix. While a handful of healthcare organizations across the country now use pharmacogenomics clinically, no state has yet undertaken comprehensive implementation, and most Minnesotans do not have access to guided care. As I mentioned, my colleagues and I are currently leading a University of Minnesota Grand Challenge initiative to advance the equitable implementation of pharmacogenomics, although our efforts have developed very quickly into a multi-institutional project. Our now 75-person group involves healthcare organizations, pharmacies, clinicians, educators, and researchers from Allina, Children's Minnesota, Essentia, Mayo Clinic, and Sanford Health. All are excited about collaborating to bring pharmacogenomics to the state or use this technology to benefit their own patients. But while it may seem it's not necessary to have state involvement to bring together a group in exploration, there is a limit to what we can do without an express endorsement and mandate from this body. That is why we ask for this measure to be passed. This bill before you would provide legislative authorization for a task force of experts to deliver a data-informed evaluation and report and a roadmap for scaling up pharmacogenomics equitably into healthcare statewide. If the state of Minnesota would make a commitment to pharmacogenomics, I have no doubt we could lead the nation in the implementation of a cutting-edge science to improve the health for all Minnesotans. Thank you, Madam Chair and distinguished committee members.
Thank you. And Representative Kwan, would you like to move on to the next testifiers to testify towards the bill and for higher ed?
Well, Madam Chair, you know, understanding the time constraints on that, and then the amendment narrowed down some of that. We can go to further testifying, but maybe it would be more useful if committee members had some questions and gained some familiarity. But I would like to sum it up as that pharmacogenomics is not only a way to save money. In other words, you take the right medicine first. You don't have to do 2, 3 to find the right one. It also helps the quality of life and the health outcome disparities that have already been uncovered that are solved by pharmacogenomics, I think would help many of the communities that maybe have not had as great of health care because we haven't done the individualization to make sure they get the right medicine. They're just getting what the average first medicine comes out. And that's where I think this could make a big difference, is closing those disparities of outcome.
Okay, well, thank you. We do have questions. We have two questions from our members. And first one is Representative Erickson and then Representative Cleborn. Representative Erickson.
No, Madam Chair, I do not have a question.
Okay, Representative Cleborn.
Thank you. Mine's not really a question either. It's a statement. I want to just thank Representative Quam for bringing this forward. You know, our technology is changing so fast, and the way healthcare is moving today, it's important that we are able to use the tools to help people get the medications they want without having to go through the adverse side effects of medicine that may not be appropriate for them. So I just want to say to Representative Quam, if I can work with you on this going forward, please let me know. And thank you for bringing this legislation forward.
Are there any further questions? Are there further questions by members? Seeing none, I will move, have Representative Quam say any closing remarks that he would like to share with the committee.
Madam Chair, I would like to, Representative Bonner is also a co-author, and over the last few years, several members on both sides of the party have participated in bills to try and further this effort. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. And I will renew my motion that House File 81, as amended, be referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. The clerk will take the roll.
Bernardi.
Aye.
Bernardi, aye. Vice Chair Christensen.
Aye.
Christensen, aye. Representative O'Neill.
Aye.
O'Neill, aye. Representative Albright.
Aye.
Albright, aye. Representative Daniels.
Aye.
Daniels, aye. Representative Erickson.
Aye.
Erickson, aye. Representative Hansen. Representative Hansen. Representative Heintzman.
Aye.
Heintzman, aye. Representative Howard.
Aye.
Howard, aye. Representative Keeler.
Aye.
Keeler, aye. Representative Cleborn.
Cleborn, aye.
Cleborn, aye. Representative Kosnick.
Kosnick, aye.
Kosnick, aye. Representative Kreisha. Representative Kreisha. Representative Mason.
Mason, aye.
Mason, aye. Representative Meckland.
Meckland, aye.
Meckland, aye. Representative Noor.
Noor, aye.
Noor, aye. Representative Sandell.
Aye.
Sandell, aye. Representative Sandsted.
Aye.
Sandsted, aye. Representative Thompson.
Aye.
Thompson, aye. There are 17 ayes and 2 absent.
Being there 17 ayes and 0 nays, the motion passes and House File 81 is referred to the Health, Finance, and Policy Committee. Thank you, Representative Quam, and to our testifiers. Members, we have concluded our agenda, and the meeting now is adjourned.